Away from your radio? Listen to 1010XL on the 1010XL app, a free download for all smartphone users, or say, Alexa, open 1010XL.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now back in the pocket, has a bit of time, now being chased. Lance throws, he's looking downfield, he's got a receiver, and it is caught. Jimmy Smith at the 5, into the end zone, touchdown Jacksonville. Play action, Brunell, deep drop, pressure coming, turns and Clancy's looking for Jimmy Smith down the sideline. Smith gets behind the covers, makes the catch, touchdown Jacksonville. Play clock running down, he takes the snap, drop back, here comes the blitz. Brunell turns and needs the ball, and he's looking for Jimmy Smith, and it is caught. Jimmy Smith's got it, he's on the run inside the 10, 5, touchdown Jimmy Smith, his third of the football game, 40 yards, and he's got 287 yards receiving.
Live from TIAA Bank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Friday to you as we move to day two of the NCAA tournament. Talking Jaguar football for the next 2 hours. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I got pretty much slaughtered, at least by first day standards go, Tony, in my bracket. I think I was 10-6 yesterday. Just ugly. That's about as bad as I can ever remember on day number one. I did get a tweet from one of our listeners out there, Brian Williams, who went 16-0 and showed the proof, you know, on his whatever bracket challenge he's logged into, showed all the highlights. Yep. And he made sure to send that to everybody he could possibly imagine in the national media as well. I guess I would too. He said, am I lucky or just brilliant? Oh, you're probably pretty smart, but you're probably pretty lucky as well. I mean, you got to get a little bit lucky. You know, some of these games come down to the wire, and you know, you could easily be on the wrong side of a one going up at the buzzer, but that's pretty impressive nonetheless. I've never gone 16-0. Went 15-1 once on the first day.
I've been 16-0 I think once.
Have you? Never
on
for
a
me.
Day. Yeah.
On a day.
Yeah, like, on a day. Like, it was one of the years Vanderbilt made the Sweet 16. Like, it was one of those where, generally speaking, if Vanderbilt does well in a bracket, I do well in a bracket.
Yeah, because you're getting right.
Yeah, but
my wife does well when Purdue, Maryland, and Duke do well.
Yeah.
Because she always picks them to go to the Final
it's
Four.
One of those things. Like, yesterday, there were, what, three upsets? There was Florida, there was Murray State, and I guess Baylor. So they were all there in the same bracket, too.
Oh, I gave you Baylor, baby.
Yeah.
That's all I gave you.
And I
gave you a lot of problems if you followed my advice.
And I got two of those. Unfortunately, I had a handful of other upsets that didn't come through. Yeah, I was 11-5 yesterday, so it wasn't like I was any better.
You're right. He went 12-4, I believe.
I didn't lose any Sweet 16 teams. So.
Me either. No, I lost Belmont. I did have him
that's
in the Sweet
a positive,
16.
I
but,
guess, but
it feels
like the $1 million slipped out of my hands.
Yeah,
yesterday.
You know, I've lost. Are you eligible for the million? Like, who's giving out the million now? Warren Buffett.
ESPN.
Does Warren Buffett only do it for his employees? He always has some kind of challenge like that where.
Yeah, I don't know.
If, you know, for the perfect bracket.
Yeah.
No one's getting the perfect bracket. Hate to break it to Brandon, who, by the way, excuse me, Brian. My bad, Brian. Brian Williams is who sent this to me. He's not going, whatever, 63-0 either. I don't believe, but God bless him if he
gotta
does.
You got to be 16-0
man.
To get there, right?
No question about that, says the guy who's never been 16-0. So I don't know how that old thing goes, but I just felt like. It just got all chewed up for me last night, which is fine. You know what? Still got my Final Four to root for, and as long as that lasts, I'll hang in there. Otherwise, I'll just root for the carnage.
Yeah, we have two brackets in the challenge on 1010XL.com that got all 16, just two. So,
oh, that's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Maybe Brian's one of them. I don't know if he entered that one or not, but
You don't get proper names. You got screen names on there.
What do you got for screen names?
We got Bullish 12.
Bullish 12.
And then TLLECY.
TLLECY.
Telecy. Yeah.
I don't know. Couldn't tell you. But good for them. That's two more than I would have thought on a local. You know, ESPN's going to get some, right? Brian said on he was one of 0.26% of people who filled out a bracket who got it 100% right. That still seems like a pretty high number.
Yeah.
Though, you know, I guess there wasn't that really crazy one. I mean, the Murray State, that kid can play. Beast Kid picked Murray State to win the whole thing. will be posted his bracket that Logan selected, I believe. And he had Murray State winning the championship. You know what? After yesterday, I could buy him going a little bit deeper anyway. I don't think they'll win the championship, but who knows? You know what? I'm the last guy you should ask about that. All right, so day two of the tournament is upon us. We'll talk Jags with you, however, for the next 2 hours. As Tony, you mentioned to Dan and Jeff about 10 minutes ago what we'll be talking about today. Who is the most improved? Who will be the most improved Jaguar from 2018 to 2019? Already some people are saying the quarterback. Well, it's not the same person, okay? We're looking for a specific player who was on the team last year and you think is going to make the biggest improvement from last year to this year. So, I mean, look, Jake Ryan had a torn ACL last year, right? So if he comes in and plays well, you could say that's a huge improvement over not playing, but he wasn't on the team last year.
Correct.
Now, if you want to put Cam Robinson in that category, some people have, and it's not a question of, well, will he play versus will he not play, but it's what your expectations were and what you were seeing from him, I think, prior to him tearing the ACL that had people a little bit concerned last year.
No, there's no doubt about it. Look, he just wasn't very good early on in the season last year, and then he tore the ACL, and who knows what it would have been, you know, if he makes some adjustments and it turns around for him a little bit there in his sophomore campaign, but it wasn't very good. And it's there's so much. We talked about, you know, what they do with that number 7 pick. We talk about it virtually every day, obviously, and it does feel like it's pretty wide open to me. Like, offensive line, I could see that in play. I can see defensive line in play for the Jags at this point because they need depth in that group, and I'm not sure that it's – you can't convince me it's coming from Taven Bryan. Maybe inside the building they feel differently about it, but you can't convince me.
I'd love for it to be Taven Bryan.
Right, would love for that to happen. DJ Chark, certainly a viable answer for this. The draft class last year, which honestly felt like a group that was drafted with the idea of we don't need them, especially in 2018, but these guys are all guys that we feel really good about going into the future. Well, the future's now, boy. I mean, they need it. Harrison obviously stepping into the lineup as a starting safety for this football team.
Will Richards has got an opportunity as of right now.
Potentially to be their tackle.
Yeah.
On the opposite end of Cam Robinson. DJ Chark needs to be a playmaker for them coming into this season. And Taven Bryan, as we already mentioned, like, you could pick any of the top four draft picks they had last year would be a very viable answer for the question today. And I think, honestly, they need three out of the four of them, and likely all four, to take a step up if they really are going to be a team that is competing deep into the playoffs, in my opinion.
Strongman Tyler Shatley meeting with the Minnesota Vikings. Don't know if you saw that. You know, it looks like we're going to see some turnover on the depth chart, at least the two deep for the Jacksonville offensive line. We'll see where that all goes. And James O'Shaughnessy is back in the fold as well. If you want to talk any aspect of Jaguar football, had a lot of Nick Foles discussion, obviously, this week. You're welcome to join the program. By the way, Tommy Mack's off today. Should be back with us next Friday, and that'll be kind of a regular hit and miss a little bit in the off season until we get back into September and the regular football season here on Jaguars Today. Some pro days. A lot of quarterbacks now. The top guys, most of them have performed at their pro day. Some getting big praise, others getting questioned a little bit. We'll take a look at some of those. Also take a look at another day. Another half dozen mock drafts are out. We'll highlight one or two of the more interesting ones, at least some of the bigger name pundits out there that have put them out in the last 24 hours or so. So we'll take a look at those. 641-1010 on the phone lines or the text line driven by Duval Ford. Hit us up on social media on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and of course on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Who will be the most improved Jaguar from 2018 to 2019? Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go. Jaguars Today, final day of this week. It'll be, I believe, am I right about this, 5 weeks from today that we'll all be complaining about who the Jags took with the 7th overall pick?
I think you're right.
Is that right? This will be the Friday of the NFL draft. We'll be anticipating rounds 2 and 3 coming up tonight, 5 weeks from now. Or maybe we'll be just all loving it universally. I'm sure that'll happen, right, Tony? Everybody in the Jag fan base.
I don't think there's a pick right now that could make everybody happy.
No, there's not, because if you took Haskins, there'll be people say it's a wasted pick. And, you know, if you took Hawkinson, people say, well, tight end, you
can
find
somewhere
else. And
odds are if they're trading down, it's because Haskins was available.
Possibly.
You would think would be likely. And so there would be people that are upset that they passed on the opportunity still. So I don't know that they can make a pick
Nick Bosa.
We wouldn't have some people upset.
What about Nick Bosa?
Well, so there's nobody in this draft that everybody would be happy with.
Is
maybe
there?
Bosa.
Maybe I'm right, but I mean, nobody that realistically has a chance to be there at seven. But if Bosa were there, and let's say that you had
you'd still
Kyler
have people
Murray,
that were like, "How does this help Nick Foles?" We'd still get that.
It helps him by.
I know.
You know, we all know how it helps him, right? Remember 2017 when they're getting all those turnovers?
They got to get Foles weapons,
scoring points on defense, and all
that
stuff.
Pay the man $20 million and just run him out there with nothing.
You're probably right. I mean, there's not nothing will make everybody happy. What about – I know it's not in terms of the first-round pick. Would Will Greer in the third round be a pretty lauded selection if he makes it to the third round? You see what they're saying about him coming out of West Virginia's pro day?
Yeah.
That he just absolutely lit it up, and particularly in the intermediate range, which, you know, as Matt Miller, Bleacher Report, who's one of the better ones out there, points out, you know, it's one thing to do that. You know, he wasn't poo-pooing. He's like, I expect him to excel in this area. This is the strength of his game. But he's got to prove he can do that against NFL pressure when he's not in the shotgun necessarily on every single snap and getting the ball out of his hands, you know, to more open receivers. There's a higher degree of pressure, and his big question is how will he handle that? Well, he's not considered a top 10 pick at this point in time, but you know, Will Greer's played a lot of football, a lot of high-level football, mm-hmm. Tony, and maybe even that wouldn't make everybody happy. There's probably some people who think if you invest $88 million in the quarterback, you should be done investing in the quarterback for this offseason, and I understand that philosophy. I do. I would still be looking to bolster my quarterback room if the right opportunity presented itself, but only if I'm looking at a guy that I really think could develop into a starter for the long term. You know what I mean? Like 3 years from now that you could see, you know what, Nick Foles, we could move on 2 or 3 years into, you know, after the first 2 or possibly 3 years of your 4-year deal because we got this guy who has been so impressive behind you in the limited opportunities that he's gotten, and he looks like the franchise, and we've got him on a cost-controlled contract for conceivably the next 2 to 3 years, something like that. I don't want another Tanner Lee. I just don't want another project developmental tools guy. I want a guy that you can really kind of squint and see in your mind's eye that this guy could be one day the future quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Does the Jaguars not having done anything at the backup quarterback position make you think that maybe there may be more interest
in drafting
a quarterback even earlier than the third round than maybe we thought?
I don't think there's interest in drafting a quarterback before the third round. That's my guess. I'd be shocked if they took one in the first round.
I would be too.
I don't even know who could fall to the second round that they would automatically clamor for at that point in time. I think the possibility is there. Now, had they gone out and maybe spent $3 or $4 million a year on a Josh McCown or you name the backup quarterback that's signed somewhere else right now, then maybe I'd feel, you know what, between that, I'll have Tanner Lee for another year on the practice squad, see what happens, then it's probably off the table. So, no, I don't think it's completely off the table that they draft one, but drafting one early, I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around the idea that a team that, you know, is all in on winning now, and I read Doug Marrone's interview, do you see that, with Albert Breer at SI.com, where he's like, I don't know, you can characterize it as wanting to win now. I've always wanted to win now. That's always been my mandate. Anytime I've been hired, I've never had an organization tell me it's okay to not win now, just win later. But that being said, I do think there's more of a sense of urgency this year to get guys in the draft, unlike last year, who can help you immediately. Don't you get that sense still?
Or do
you are you saying that it's more open in your mind that they could go early?
I'd still be surprised if they went quarterback early. Like, I still think third round's kind of the range for it. I would like for them to have a better plan than what we currently see at the backup quarterback spot. Though, part of it, if they have to go to the backup quarterback, it's likely the fate is sealed, you know, on the 2019 season. And that's not a Jaguar-specific problem. That's generally a league-wide problem. You have to go to a backup quarterback or a third-string quarterback, you're in trouble in the NFL. But I would like to see a better plan than Cody Kessler.
Oh, hell yeah.
With a team that is in position, if you really feel like they're all the pieces are in place to win now, and Nick Foles may be the thing that you feel like puts you over the top, well, I'd rather have someone else holding the wheel in case it, there's something were to happen to Nick Foles.
Right, Nick Foles misses 3 weeks. I don't want to feel like I can't have an aggressive passing offense.
Right, and at this point, I don't feel like you could feel that way
about
what the Jags are doing.
I couldn't feel that way.
So are there options left in free agency that you would feel better about? I don't know, and to what degree that would be.
I'd rather have McCown than Kessler.
Sure, now, but McCown feels like if he's not going to be with the Jets, it does feel like to me he's likely walking away.
Well, maybe he is, but I'm saying that kind of guy, I mean, he's still potentially out there, but I don't know what that cost would be either. You know what I mean? I mean, the Jags are at the point where they just don't have the money to spend $5 million on a backup quarterback. I don't think, anyway. They got to keep a little bit of flexibility still going into the season. Here's one on the text line driven by Duval Ford. If they take a quarterback in round one, we'll all be universally pissed. Wrong.
Are you and I part of the universe?
Apparently not. But I mean,
even I wouldn't
beyond,
be.
Beyond you and I, there are plenty of Jaguar fans that have told me, man, we better not pass up Dwayne Haskins if he's sitting there at number seven,
sure,
or I am going to be pissed. So your opinion on it does not mean everyone shares the same opinion on it. And maybe your small circle of friends feel the same way as you do. But trust me, Tony and I continue to hear it from all sides on this. No, I don't think there's a universal pick that would make everybody happy. I think people would get on board. Like if you took Hockenson, if you traded down to 12, or I say 12, just in that range, right? Let's say the Dolphins come up and they wanted Haskins. Yeah, there'll be a few people pissed you didn't take Haskins. But as far as the actual pick itself, if you got T.J. Hockenson with the 13th pick in the draft, I think that would be pretty palatable to most people.
People would feel a lot better about the
right
positional value, right? Like whether that's should be a real thing or not.
Even more so, though, than taking him seventh.
Yeah.
Because if you give me T.J. Hockenson and then a second and a third round pick to go with it, or a second and a fifth round, or whatever the return that you get, a second this year, a fifth next year, I'd be all on board with that.
No, I'd be right there with you if they were able to trade down and make that kind of deal happen. I do want, like, it's just the options are getting really slim for them if they're going to do anything at the quarterback spot. It's guys like Brock Osweiler are the type of veterans that are available at this point. I'm not saying that I don't even think that's likely an upgrade to me in my mind over Cody Kessler at the backup quarterback spot, and I don't know how cheap he would be. What did he play for with Miami? Like, what was his contract last year with Miami?
I don't know. I don't know what the number was.
But that's the type that's what's available to you at this point.
Right.
Is that type of guy.
Here, literally, back-to-back texts moments ago in response to what we're talking about. If Haskins is available at 7 and they don't trade back, I will be pissed. Followed immediately by a different number texting in, if Haskins is there and we don't take him, I'm pissed. So there's no universal. Nobody's going to make everybody happy, right? The closest we've had recently is probably Jalen Ramsey, right? Because he had been discussed.
Yeah.
He was somewhat of a local product, you know, having played football in Tallahassee. He was considered one of the tip-top guys at his position. He seemed to embrace the idea of playing for Jacksonville and realigning with Telvin Smith and Rashad Greene.
Yeah. You know, more universally teammates celebrated than even if Bosa had fallen to him, that pick would have been.
Yes.
By the time we got to draft night.
I think so. By the time we got to draft night. And still then, I'm sure there were a few people saying, oh, that's just not a good pick, because there's always going to be a few in every crowd. But if you have like 90% agreement is probably better than you can hope for in most realms of sport opinion anyway, right? So if it's something like that, that's as close as you're going to get anyway. I'm sure, I would imagine, just based on the feedback we got, Jalen was had over a 90% approval rating, at least from the folks we heard from at that point in time. So who knows, you know, how it all plays out. What are you laughing
at?
Well,
if you could get the same contract that Brock Osweiler played for under Miami last year, you would save about $100,000 off of Cody Kessler.
Is that what it was?
Well, yeah. Brock Osweiler last year played for 1 year, $880,000.
It's like Bortles money.
Yeah, for the Miami Dolphins. That's how far he had fallen. All that had gone on with that guy, contract.
Can you see, what page are you on? A spot track page?
Yeah.
What has he made in his career?
Let's see.
Brock Osweiler.
Pull it up.
By the way, I've said this before. I interviewed Brock Osweiler at Super Bowl 50. You know, on media day, super impressive individual, like really bright, really seemed like just, I thought he was a guy that man, he was so impressive. Like, all these leadership skills he kind of exuded, and I just thought, man, if he ever gets his chance, I thought this guy could do really well. Well, yeah. You got to be able to play.
$41 million.
Oh God!
In his career, the last 2 years,
Brock Osweiler's made $41 million. Nick Foles made 32.
Right.
From what I saw,
he's
now,
made
Nick will make $41 million.
The last 2 years, when he went back to Denver in 2017, he's been vets minimum basically the last 2 years. $775, and then $880 last year with Miami.
That's still a lot, you know. Yeah, 41.
Oh, it's $41 million's crazy.
You know, taxes eat up a huge chunk of that. Whatever, blah blah blah. If you don't have $10 million in the bank for Brock Osweiler, you have been living way above what you should have.
The Browns willing to eat that $15.2 million pill in 2017
just
on that
to
trade.
Get rid of him.
And get
or
a couple
no,
draft picks.
Take him on and get the draft right. Yeah. They got right. Houston got rid of him. Got gave up the second round pick, right, in that deal?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Would it have been worth, like, what draft pick would it have been worth to you to get the $15.5 million back now that Blake has cost them in dead money? Fourth rounder? I wouldn't want to do it for the second rounder, right? Because you're getting that guy. You'll get the cap space back next year. That dead money will disappear off the cap. And you'll recoup that money next year, at least in terms of cap space. But I wouldn't give one of those first four picks, those first, second, or two third rounders to do that deal. But I guess if you're in tight enough straits, that's what Houston felt like they needed to do. A second-round pick, man. You look at it, like teams like the Colts and the Jets this year, that's what they should have been searching for, right? Whose bad contract can we take on and eat and pick up a draft pick like that? By the way, Colts got Justin Houston yesterday. That doesn't make me happy. He got him at a pretty good discount. He says he has plenty left in the tank. We'll find out. He hasn't been a monster pass rusher in the last few years. But
no, you know, we've talked about the sack versus quarterback hit numbers. You know, it's been something we've discussed.
Yes.
Over the last few months, basically, here on the show, talking about Dante, where it was extraordinarily high. Like, how often he was hitting the quarterback versus getting a sack.
Right. He had, like I forget what, it was crazy percentage.
It was like 8 and 10,
yes.
I think, 2 years ago. Last year, for Houston, in Kansas City, he had 9 sacks. With the Chiefs last year, he had 12 quarterback hits.
Right, so that's exceeding expectation.
Yeah.
Right? In other words,
so I think he was 2 for 2 in the playoffs.
When Dante did that, when he had 10 quarterback hits, you should have expected 4 or 5 sacks based on the average. Again, it's a rule, 45% rule. 45% of your quarterback hits over time translate to sacks. That's just the NFL average. And that's why when Yannick Ngakoue was 3rd in the league in quarterback hits but nowhere near 3rd in the league in sacks, that's a pretty good indicator that he could have a major bounce-back season. Maybe you think he'll be the most improved Jaguar. As a matter of fact, in 2019, tell us who you think that'll be. Hit us up on social media this morning on Twitter, Facebook, or the text line, driven by Duval Ford. You can also pick up the phone line at 641-1010 and talk any aspect of Jaguar football. The question of the day, who will be the most improved Jag from 2018 to 2019? Oh, we got a special guest coming up today. We'll tell you who on the other side. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Hey, what's happening? This is Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, coming up today at 11:20, we'll go in the throwback, Wayback Machine, and welcome in a former Jaguar wide receiver, not Cecil Shorts, who's going to join us on the program next week, who's been interacting with the Jaguars Today crew on social media. But Mike Sims-Walker, a former third-round pick of the Jags, injury-marred tenure here in Jacksonville in the National Football League. We'll catch up with Mike Sims-Walker later on this morning at 11:20 and find out what he's been up to. Still a pretty young man at the age of 34 right now, and I believe living down in Orlando still, if I'm not mistaken. But we'll check in with Mike, find out what he's been up to shortly coming up on the program today. Saw this, Tony. Couple of things. One, the Rams matched the Detroit Lions' offer sheet that they signed restricted free agent Malcolm Brown to. Malcolm Brown, not the defensive lineman, formerly now the Patriots, who I think signed with the Saints, if I'm not mistaken. But this Malcolm Brown was the backup to Todd Gurley primarily this year. And then he got banged up. They had John Kelly, the rookie out of Tennessee, but being a rookie, they didn't want to put everything in his hands when Gurley was struggling down the stretch with injury, and they signed C.J. Anderson, and Anderson was a revelation, came in and, you know, first game, like 167 yards, I think it was, something like that, but played spectacularly well in that offense. And so Detroit had signed Brown to an offer sheet, 2 years, $3.25 million. Not a massive deal, but nonetheless, the Rams decided to match that and bring him back, which probably takes away the opportunity for C.J. Anderson to go back to Los Angeles. So Anderson, not necessarily speaking specifically about the Rams situation, but talking about his situation overall, was asked by a fan on Twitter where he's going to sign, said he doesn't know, and then he said, quote, "The disrespect is real. It is what it is. It's the same story over and over. All I ever wanted was a full opportunity to play 16, meaning 16 games. My 16 versus anybody else's 16 with no front office or coach trying to move me out of the way or play me like we – I don't understand what he said here. Or play me like this guy game. I'm not sure what that means, but I just want a 16. That's all I ask." In other words, he wants somebody to basically anoint him the starter somewhere. That's what it sounds like. No one's going to do that for C.J. Anderson at this point in time. That's pretty clear. For whatever reason, it is. And he has been an effective runner when he's been given the ball, but cut by multiple teams last year. Pro Football Talk speculates that he may be a victim of his own success. He highlighted just how replaceable expensive running backs are, so why would you spend much money on a guy like C.J. Anderson? To me, C.J. Anderson would be the ideal guy to bring into Jacksonville. Give me C.J. Anderson on a one-year deal, and I'll draft a running back next year if I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, because this is not a great running back class. You're going to get more well, not necessarily. I mean, some running backs come right in, hit the ground running, no pun intended, and so it, just because you're a rookie at that position doesn't mean you can't be effective. But you know what C.J. Anderson can be in the National Football League. You know he can handle a big workload. He's a good receiver out of the backfield. If something happens to Leonard Fournette, he could be your frontline starter for a month or maybe even longer as far as that goes. In a year where it's not a great quarterback class, Tony, or a running back class, excuse me, and the Jags have so many needs in the draft, give me C.J. Anderson right now for $2 million around a one-year deal rather than spend a third-round pick on one of these guys.
I tend to agree with you, and we'll see. They could certainly afford to do that if they wanted to. They still got enough money to make that work if they wanted to get that kind of thing done. You look – the running backs around the league, probably a lot of them feel that way, right? Like the disrespect is real with what running backs are getting paid. Well, they're more replaceable than a lot of other positions are.
I didn't make you play running back.
The career is shorter than a lot of other positions are. Tevin Coleman was kind of the apple of everyone's eye at the running back spot coming into this free agency, right?
Other than Le'Veon Bell.
Right? Other than Bell, right? And Bell got what he got. But Tevin Coleman, 2 years, $8.5 million. And it's really a one-year deal.
Right.
In San Francisco for, what, 3.5?
3.6.
Yeah, for that first year.
With nothing guaranteed beyond right. That, I don't believe.
If that's what Tevin Coleman's getting, I get it, CJ. I thought that you were a good player while you were in Denver. I thought you looked great last year while you were in L.A. What do you think anyone's going to pay you, man? Like, if Tevin Coleman's going to have to come in and he's going to share the load out there in San Francisco with two or three other guys, no one's going to make you the guy. There are very few guys that are the guy in the league anymore anyway, but there's certainly no teams that at this point in free agency are looking for the guy to carry the load for their franchise. It just doesn't happen.
You know, and I've heard some people, Casey Joyner had on my show on Sirius a couple weeks ago, we're talking about Tevin Coleman, his expectations for him. You know, he's big into run blocking metrics and all this stuff. He thinks they're going to turn the offense, the running game, over to Tevin Coleman and San Fran. He thinks that McKinnon and Breida are going to be the odd man out, and he thinks that Coleman is going to be a sneaky candidate for 300 touches this year. Even so, at that price,
it's an even better contract.
Right. I mean, for the team, yeah, it's an even better contract. Yeah. But look, C.J. Anderson, my guess is may wait until training camp and look for a better opportunity. It looks like he's looking for a depth chart opportunity, like maybe with an incentive-laden deal where he can go out and prove, hey, I could be another 1,000-yard guy. He was a 1,000-yard guy once in his career. And rather than slot in behind somebody who I know, if like in the case of Leonard Fournette, you can argue, well, you know, he's not going to stay healthy. Well, you don't know that, okay? No. You suspect that, whatever. But while he's healthy, and if he does stay healthy, they want him to be a workhorse back. They've talked about him as being a true three-down back. I don't know how many carries there are for C.J. Anderson or any backup in a game that Leonard Fournette is healthy. What, eight, maxing out at around eight, something like that, right?
Maybe eight, ten, maybe.
Catcher two, something like that. I mean, if this guy's looking for the opportunity to play as much as possible, he's probably better off waiting to see if somebody gets hurt, a la Jerick McKinnon last year in San Francisco.
Sure.
You would think that his performance down the stretch and in the postseason would merit C.J. Anderson a better opportunity or elevate his stature in the eyes of the decision makers around the National Football League. Again, love to see him here in Jacksonville. I think he'd be perfect. Give me him over Damian Harris. I can get a running back next year. Again, those guys can come in. They don't need a year of seasoning. You're wasting a year with a running back, putting him on the bench. And this is not a great running back class, most will tell you. So why the guy who goes in the third round this year, maybe getting pushed up the board due to scarcity, right? Maybe a fourth round pick in most years' drafts. Next year is supposed to be a lot better at that spot. Give me a vet who's done it on a cheap contract behind Leonard Fournette as insurance, and let me spend those third round picks on any number of other positions that I can get my hands on right now. Speaking of picks, Lance Zierlein over at NFL.com put out his second mock draft of this mock draft season yesterday. Tone, no surprise. This is a cookie-cutter chalk at the top, at least for the first, let's say, six of the first seven picks. The Giants pick is interesting. He goes with Kyler Murray with the number one slot, which right now that seems like that's where everybody feels he's going to go, is to the Arizona Cardinals. So he goes number one. Nick Bosa going number two to San Francisco. I don't know if he's not projecting trades, but in this one he doesn't have the Jets trading out of three. He has them selecting Josh Allen, the pass rusher out of Kentucky, who previously had number one overall going to the Arizona Cardinals, which was a little odd. Quinnen Williams going number four to the Oakland Raiders, and Devin White jumped up from 17th in his last mock draft to 5th to the Tampa Bay Bucks, which you see more and more frequently as a replacement for Quan Alexander there. Yep. Then they get to the Giants, or Zierlein gets to the Giants, and he has them taking DK Metcalf. I cannot at all. I mean, are the Giants going to go out there and put that kind of pressure on a boom-bust type pick that, hey, we just traded Odell and we got the 17th pick? Put it this way. Could you trade from 17 to 6 in the draft for a third-round pick in Jabril Peppers? I say hell no.
No.
I say no way. So, to me, the 6th pick overall is worth more than the package of compensation they got from Odell Beckham Jr. So, you got to trade a guy who's proven to be one of the top two or three wide receivers in the National Football League and then spend a pick that's more valuable than the package you got back on a guy who is maybe the ultimate boom-bust candidate at wide receiver. Does not seem like that's a likely scenario to me.
No, not at all.
I mean, look, if DK Metcalf's hanging out there at 17 in the draft, and who knows if he would be or not, maybe that. So anyway, that leaves the situation where Haskins would be available to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And so, of course, they take Juwan Taylor, the offensive tackle, out of Florida, because that seems to be now a rite of passage. You must all at least do one mock draft that puts Juwan Taylor to the Jags, or you're not doing it right. He had Taylor going to the Bengals at number 11 the last time out. Who did he have going to the Jags?
Did he have another offensive lineman ahead of Taylor in that one?
No. That was, I read him right down the line. He had Kyler Murray.
I mean, in his first mock draft.
Oh, in his first mock to the Jags, you're talking about?
In the first mock where he had Taylor going 11, was there another lineman
I'm
that came
looking,
off?
I'm trying to figure out right now. I'm kind of scrolling down to see. He has Andre Dillard here going 9th. He had him going 16th last time.
Okay.
He had Hockenson going 10th. He had him 27th to the Raiders last time. Didn't have Devin Bush in the first round. This is interesting. He's kind of all over the place. Moved Ed Oliver up from number 28 to number 12. Like, what did he do that we didn't know about Ed Oliver in that point in time? Oh, here we go. He had Haskins previously to the Jags. He had Haskins in his first mock, and he's got him lasting to the 13th pick now as the selection of the Miami Dolphins. So I doubt he had – let's see. He did have Jonah Williams going 14, so it looked like Taylor was the top offensive lineman on his board selected in his mock draft, regardless of which team he had him penciled into. But like many, he's got him penciled in to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Drew Lock, he's got going to the Giants with the 17th pick. The word is Missouri had their pro day this week. Word is he showed you everything you love about him and he showed you everything you don't love about him, right? Great arm, great talent, can throw from off balance. He's got crazy arm talent, right? He can flick it. He doesn't need to wind up a la Daniel Jones to heave the ball 40 yards down the field. He can just throw it with ease as far and as he wants to, but not always as accurately as you would like him to.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to be the case, the word coming out of Drew Lock's pro day, that it's exactly what you would have expected out of him. You see the things that make some people think he has the most upside of any player in this draft. Tony Pauline thinks he has the most upside. He also recognizes he's an incredible bust risk.
Right.
You know, who does that sound like to you? Huge. I mean, I guess there have been a bunch of those guys. Huge arm. Can we rein him in? To some degree, Josh Allen last year.
Allen's that type of guy. Cutler was that type of guy.
Who was?
Cutler.
You think so?
Yeah.
With the accuracy, too, even coming out of Vandy, was he questioned that much about it?
Yeah.
Huh. I thought it was more you would know better than I would, following Vandy as closely as you do. At this point, let me ask you, would it shock you entirely if Will Grier went ahead of Drew Lock?
No.
Wouldn't shock me.
It wouldn't shock me if somebody
liked him more. Maybe a mild
surprise,
yeah. Right? But I mean, we sit there and we look at Drew Lock. I mean, I think the most translatable characteristic of a quarterback that you look for is accuracy, right? Guys who are inaccurate at the college level don't all of a sudden become wildly more accurate.
Yeah, they're generally going to be inaccurate.
That may have been a bad choice, wildly more accurate. Right? That may have been the worst phrasing I've chosen all week for anything. But,
and I think that's part of the reason why, like, I see all the metrics on Haskins and I just fall more in love with the guy. Like, that's what he has. Like, you have questions about his mobility in the pocket. Like, there are things that you question how long he actually got to play.
Right.
But the accuracy when he was throwing the ball is not a question mark.
He doesn't
Dwayne
seem
Haskins.
Like a wind-up guy either,
no.
Right? Like, I look at him, looks like he's got pretty tight mechanics. Like, Byron, yeah. You look at Byron Leftwich. Byron was that kind of quarterback, right?
Yes.
He wasn't going to outrun too many guys.
No.
You know, he thought he was swifter than he actually was. He thought he was a lot of things that he wasn't necessarily. And I think Byron will turn out to be a much better coach, it appears, than he was an NFL quarterback. But, I mean, Byron compounded his lack of mobility with that slow delivery.
Delivery, yeah.
You know, if Haskins can get rid of it quickly, I think you can still be the prototypical. You have to have good footwork, right? You have to be semi-quick and agile to some degree.
Yeah, they were trying to show that off at his pro day.
Right.
Like, a lot of the drills they were doing, they were trying to show, look, he can move in the pocket.
Well, right.
All right. It's pro day. You do what you got to do.
You think about the subtle movements. Look at Dan Marino and Peyton Manning and classic pocket passers
that could
not race me.
Yeah. Brady's maybe the all-time example. Like, he's unbelievable in the pocket. Peyton was that way, yeah.
Painfully slow to watch run.
Yep.
Yet he somehow, I guess you hang around long enough, you'll put up the number. He somehow has managed to run for 1,000 yards.
Well, and there's always going to be a place in football for that guy, right? The guy who has the subtle pocket stuff that can read it and throw it accurately, there's always going to be a place for that guy in the NFL. It feels like where the room is expanding is for the guy that can run around and extend a play and make it happen that way. Like,
yes.
That's where it feels like the NFL is expanding, where that guy, it was such an exception to the rule for that guy to make it.
Will we
NFL.
Get to the point where the NFL is tilted towards that guy?
I don't think so.
Because college football's been going that way in a big way.
But
right?
I think with the additional speed on an NFL field, I think the guy that can read it, see it, throw it is always going to be the top of the food chain.
So you're going to be able to throw it faster than you are outrun somebody, right? You get rid of it.
It doesn't mean you can't make plays.
I mean, we're not asking Nick Foles to come in here and run like Blake Bortles.
No.
If you're expecting anything close to that, you're going to be wildly.
Yeah.
Disappointed. Well, again, that time I think I used wildly in a better context.
I do wonder, too, like, everyone has Kyler Murray there at number one on their mock drafts right now. If they don't have him at one, where do they think he fits? Right? Like, the idea is Arizona loves him. Do the other quarterback needy teams there in the top 10, do they love him, or is it just Arizona that loves Kyler Murray?
I think it's because it's more my sense is that it's an Arizona thing.
Right.
That it possibly could be an Oakland thing if he got by Arizona.
Right.
But he's not like a New York Giants type guy. He's not an Elway guy, right? He's that these other teams, that if Arizona doesn't take Kyler Murray, he could conceivably be the one who tumbles.
Sure.
Right? At least relative to where everyone's got him going in the mock drafts. By the way, Cecil's at it again. Love Cecil Shorts, man. He answers the question of the day. Who do you think will be the most improved Jaguar from 2018 to 2019? He goes, Ronnie Harrison or Dede Westbrook. Excited to see Ronnie get more playing time. And Dede, I think, could be a legit wide receiver threat in this league. Tough kid with a high ceiling.
There we go.
Love it. Cecil Shorts going to join the program, I believe, next Tuesday, ET. Is that when we've got Cecil coming on?
Yeah, Tuesday sounds about right.
Next Tuesday, we'll catch up with Cecil Shorts. We appreciate him weighing in and being part of the Jaguars today.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, I got a trio of birthdays for you on this date in football history, and that's about it. On March 22nd throughout the years, happy 59th to Jimbo Covert. Jimbo Covert, of course, was the sixth overall pick of the 1983 NFL draft by the Chicago Bears and played left tackle for them for eight seasons. He was starting left tackle for 15 of the 16 games for the 1985 Super Bowl champion Bears, a two-time Pro Bowler, and a two-time first-team All-Pro. Again, Jimbo Covert, 59 years old today. Russell Maryland, born in the state exactly 50 years ago, the former number one overall pick in the draft in 1991. Only made one Pro Bowl with the Cowboys, but he did win three Super Bowls before signing a lucrative deal with the Oakland Raiders, ending his career with the Green Bay Packers for a season. Russell Maryland, 50 years old today, and happy 31st to a former Jaguar running back. Speaking of maybe another example why you don't overpay running backs, Chris Ivory managed 821 yards rushing for the Jags in 2014 and 2015 combined. Was supposed to be basically the starter for this football team. Tony had an injury pop up right as he was getting set to make his Jaguars debut in 2015. It was a scratch from the opener and never really got on track for the team after that. A former 1,000-yard rusher in his one Pro Bowl season with the New York Jets, Chris Ivory, was a member of the Buffalo Bills last year. He turns 31 years old today, and that's what I got for you on this date in football history.
Now, let's roll around the NFL with Roland Reich Plumbing, where quality and experience count.
The L.A. Rams are matching the two-year, $3.25 million offer sheet for running back Malcolm Brown. The Detroit Lions made the offer this week for Brown, who is a restricted free agent. The Rams have decided to match that offer, meaning that he'll remain with L.A. Speaking of the Rams, the NFL is heading back to Honolulu, but not for the Pro Bowl. The Rams announced yesterday that they will be playing the Dallas Cowboys for a preseason game in Hawaii this coming August. The Baltimore Ravens have re-signed quarterback Robert Griffin III to a two-year deal, RG3. Spent last year as the backup for Flacco and Lamar Jackson, and will stay in that role with the Ravens this year behind Lamar. The Indianapolis Colts have agreed to a two-year deal with linebacker Justin Houston. Houston had spent the first 8 years of his career in Kansas City, making the Pro Bowl four times during his time there before he was released by the Chiefs a couple weeks ago. Houston had an interception, five forced fumbles, and nine sacks on 12 registered quarterback hits last season for the Chiefs in 12 games. In the regular season, added two more sacks during their playoff run to the AFC Championship game. The NFL's competition committee has proposed two potential expansions to instant replay. The first would only include pass interference calls. The second would include pass interference, roughing the passer, and unnecessary hits against a defenseless receiver. The proposed rules do stipulate that a flag would have to be thrown for an infraction to be reviewed. If no flag was thrown, there still wouldn't be replay. If either rule is passed, it would include a one-year trial phase before it would be made a permanent rule.
So I did read through these. Let me understand. Do you understand this to mean that if a pass interference is thrown, you can review it to see if it should have been thrown?
Correct.
And you can take it away, or to see maybe if it goes above and beyond pass interference, like hitting a defenseless receiver, something of that ilk?
I'm not sure if another flag, like you could call a different penalty.
But it wouldn't have mattered in the Saints-Rams game.
The Saints-Rams game is
no
still not a reviewable play.
Right. And by the way, Rich McKay, who is the chairman of the competition committee for the NFL with the owners' meetings going on, says, and along with NFL Executive VP of Football Operations, Troy Vincent, claimed that the proposed sky judge, you know, like they do in the AAF, right, the Alliance of American Football, where you've got a referee basically above and beyond the ones you have on the field who can say, hey, we need to take another look at this. Somebody missed something obviously bad here. And rather than leaving it up to the coaches to catch it in time before the next snap, can kind of buzz in and say, let's slow down for a second here. Let's make sure we got this right. They claim that type of a sky judge, so-called sky judge, received absolutely no support from any member of the competition committee.
Right.
Which, PFT questions, considering Sean Payton, the head coach of the Saints, has made it clear he's determined to ensure that no team suffers the same fate that his did in the NFC Championship game when a blatantly blown call cost the Saints a chance to pick up a first down, maybe run the clock down, kick a game-winning field goal. And was that that was the championship game? Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that was the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, and possibly go to the Super Bowl then. So hard to believe that nobody – there was no support whatsoever. I don't get it. They don't want to embarrass the refs. They don't want to draw attention to missed calls or how many there are out there. And, you know, I guess I'm trying to kind of play devil's advocate here. What's the downside to this sky judge thing? And there may be something I'm not thinking of, but – let's say the sky judge buzzes down five times a game. Is that going to put in the mind of fans that, hey, we've been dealing with substandard crap for a long time? I mean, so what? What are you going to do? Ask for a refund from last year? I mean, what? Seriously, like, what
I
is?
Don't know.
What's the practical downside to the sky judge?
Timing.
Maybe
they don't want to extend the game any more than it's already extended.
I mean,
they changed the TV windows recently just to make sure.
Right, 4:05, 4:15 instead of the 4 o'clock.
To make
kicks.
Sure that 1 o'clock games aren't going into the 4 o'clock games anymore.
Right.
They wanted to make sure that wasn't going to happen.
Would anyone care if they kicked them off at 4:30? The second wave of the games? I wouldn't care. I don't think many would care. They'd all be done before Sunday night football.
Yeah.
Right? They'd all be done even in overtime. If they go to overtime, they'd be done by 8 o'clock at night on Sunday night.
Absolutely.
I guess though, you know. You got 60 minutes. You got all these. Seriously, I mean, the networks, I guess, want them done by 7 o'clock.
Like, you see that, and part of me wonders, does that mean, is there an incentive now for a referee to throw more flags so that it can be reviewed? Like, you thought maybe that was pass interference flag so we can make sure whether or not it's pass interference.
That's a dangerous.
Right.
I think.
Which is why, if you were going to do it, just make the play reviewable.
So like they say now, let the play go. Instead of whistling it dead, because once you whistle it dead.
Right. You see a hit on a player, so now you throw a flag so that you can take a look at it?
I don't know.
You could read that rule as doing that kind of thing.
Look, there's always what they worry about, the law of unintended consequences.
Right.
What can't you anticipate if you change this? But guess what? Change it again next year. NASCAR changes their rules whenever they damn well please, right? The NASCAR people will go 2 months into the season.
Sure.
Got a whole new rules system here based on X or whatever. We're changing this.
Field goal used to be 6 points. Like, rules change.
Rules change.
You know, like, that's part of sports.
Right. Anyway, it doesn't – I don't think – we'll see, I guess, what comes out of it. I read through, and there's so much – it's practically like legalese, reading through all the proposed rules changes out there. It's like I can't even – half the time discern what exactly they're talking about. I think rather than us go through like 19 proposals that are out there, we'll see what they come up with this week, and then we'll rip it to shreds next week. That's probably how I plan on going about things. All right, Mike Sims-Walker, at one point a third-round draft selection by the Jacksonville Jaguars, got hurt in that preseason. His third year was his best with the Jags, and never really became that true number one in the NFL, but Mike Sims-Walker, he's an active guy out there. You see him on social media, and I'm sure rooting for his UCF Knights as they open up NCAA tournament play today. We'll talk with Mike Sims-Walker about his time as a Jacksonville Jaguar and what he's up to these days. He'll join us coming up next. This is Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time to turn up the heat. Duval Honda puts you in the driver's seat. Jaguars Today puts their guests on the hot seat.
Hot seat.
This interview presented by Duval Honda on 1010XL.
So Garrard, 1:10 left in the half. Sims-Walker all alone. Mike Sims-Walker, and he scores. 61 yards. And finally, David Garrard breaks through with a touchdown pass. He's the most excited guy out there for sure, next to Michael Sims-Walker.
Mike Sims-Walker, former Jaguar wide receiver, one of the 14 touchdowns he scored between the 2009-2010 seasons combined, former third-round pick of the Jags. Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith here with you on Jaguars Today. Let's welcome in former Jaguar wide receiver Mike Sims Walker to the program. Big Mike, how you doing, man? What's up?
Good. Doing well, man. How you doing, man?
We're doing well. Good to catch up with you. Good to hear from you. Before we talk a little football and find out what's been going on in your life, how excited are you for the UCF Knights taking the court today?
Man, very excited, man. I can't wait till tonight when they touch the court, man. Big fan, a big alumni guy. Got a lot of school pride, man. I'm just happy for all the success that's going on around that school.
All right, well, tell me, if they beat Virginia Commonwealth, presuming Duke survives their opening matchup, does UCF have anything for the Duke Blue Devils this weekend?
I mean, of course, they're for a reason. I mean, I think we're just running off this great season we just had. We got momentum going in this tournament right now, man. We honestly really have nothing to lose. Nobody really counted us in this thing. So, of course, we always got a chance every time we touch the court.
You know, it's Mike. Watching UCF and not only the basketball team accomplishing what it's accomplishing being in the tournament this year, but the football team as well. You know, they're playing in New Year's Day bowls for the last couple of years. I mean, really, the athletic program down there in Orlando is as good as it's ever been. How proud does that make you as an alum?
Man, very proud, man. You know, from when I was there, you know, seeing that program get to where it is now, man, it's amazing. I mean, even it looks like a whole other campus now when you go to the school, so. Man, I'm just proud that, you know, that name, that UCF name resonates everywhere. Everywhere you go now, you see either sweaters or T-shirts or you see in the airport, at workout. You see everybody representing UCF, man. It's almost like a major school now. It's a big tradition going on. So it's awesome feeling.
Could UCF football compete in a power conference?
No question about it. I mean, you should be able to answer that for yourself. You've got the past 2 years. I mean, it's not a coincidence. It's not a one good year. I mean, it's been consistent, honestly, for the past probably decade. We might have one off here and there, but for the most part, we've been consistent.
Got Mike Sims Walker here with us. Mike, you look back on your Jaguars career. What are the emotions that you associate with your time here? I gotta imagine, I'm guessing, there's gotta be some level of frustration. You know, you're ready to make your mark as a rookie. You hurt your knee and your entire rookie season gets wiped out, and you know, injuries kind of followed you a little bit after that. What is the feeling you have when you look back on your time here in Jacksonville?
Mainly just the injuries, man. That was the most frustrating part because that's the part you really can't control. I mean, it wasn't a talent issue. It wasn't a potential thing. I think it was mainly injuries. So that was the most frustrating thing. And to see guys, you know, be able to play with injuries, you know, go out there and be their best 100%, I never really was able to, you know, achieve that. And I mean, I've definitely accomplished a little things, but you know, it was never, I never really got a chance to reach my potential. It really wasn't because of me. I wasn't a bad person, no character issues, anything. Just the injuries, man. And that was really frustrating because, you know, as bad as you want to go out there and play and, you know, and improve a lot of people that you can belong in this league, I mean, those injuries just hold you back and it's really not much you can do.
What advice would you give for a guy like DJ Chark, who's a second-round pick, a lot expected out of him, but again, his rookie year, like yours, Mike, cut short by injury? What kind of advice would you give him getting ready for year two?
Well, I think a lot of help with a young guy like DJ Chark is a vet. Man, he should be following whoever the vet is. When I got there, you know, I had Reggie and Matt, but honestly, by year three, Torrey Holt came, and that really turned my career around. You know, a guy who had so much, accomplished so much in the league, and you know how to take care of his body, know how to be a pro. I mean, Torrey helped me so much tremendously in that year. I probably had my best year that year and the year after. So for DJ Chark, a young guy like that, man, you got to follow whoever the most respected guy in the locker room is. Hopefully he's a receiver. Or whoever the most respected receiver in your room is, the guy who knows how to act accordingly, be a pro inside that facility, know how to take care of his body. I mean, I model him every day of the week.
Talking here with Mike Sims Walker, former Jaguar wide receiver. Mike, can that guy be the quarterback? I mean, 2-0 receiver, you know what I mean? They just signed Nick Foles. He's got the pedigree of having been a Super Bowl MVP. I would assume he's going to have the instant respect in the locker room because they don't have something comparable to that Torrey Holt-type mentor in the wide receiver room that you had. So can you get that from your quarterback if you're a young wide receiver?
I mean, you can get it to a certain extent. I think the quarterback always gives you confidence that, you know, he needs you, he wants you, you know what I mean? Like, he needs relying on you. And that quarterback gives you that type of confidence, man. It's priceless because you know, for a young guy, you know, you're always trying to figure out what am I doing wrong or what do I need to do. You know, there's never an assurance, you know, as a young guy going in. So you're always trying to get assurance somewhere in it. And it'll be awesome to get that from your quarterback, you know, to him always in your head telling him you need to or what to do or how to do it. So he definitely get it, you know what I mean? But it won't be the same like I got it from Torrey.
Right.
Because we're in the same room. I mean, I was working every time in the training room behind him. Whatever workout he was doing, I was doing. You know, and we kind of had some of the similar issues, knee injury problems. So it was like perfect fit for me and Torrey.
And, of course, the Jags have Keenan McCardell as well, you know, who's the wide receivers coach here, who's done that. But did it help particularly because Torrey was still in the game? Can, you know, a lot of these guys may not have watched Keenan McCardell play growing up, right?
I mean, I doubt Chark knows who Keenan McCardell is. but honestly, that I forgot about that. He's a big actor because he actually played the game. So it's nothing like a coach played the game, and especially a position. I'm sure Keenan McCardell is a huge help for Chark. I had a guy named Todd Monken, a great receiver coach, probably one of the best receiver coaches I ever had. But I don't know if he played receiver, but he was awesome at knowing what to do, get us in the right position to make plays. He was hard on us, and I really needed that as a rookie, especially with the lack of veteran presence that I didn't have.
Mike, what is your favorite memory from your time here in Jacksonville?
Favorite memory. That's tough. I had so many good ones. I'm trying to think of the favorite. My favorite memory probably was playing in Dallas. Definitely was a career high, but just being in that stadium, I had a lot of family there. Actually, one of my cousins, who kind of was like a father figure to me, and that was the last game he was able to attend. He passed away, and I had my career high in front of him. So, I mean, that was probably one of my favorite memories. A lot of, not forget the Hail Mary. My ankle was hurt, but.
Mike Sims-Walker here with us. Mike, I remember having a conversation with you, oh, man, going back years now, in the Jaguar locker room. You probably don't remember this. You had so many of them. But we were talking about the Florida-Georgia All-Star game and how much talent you guys had on the Florida side of the field. And you were telling a story about how Ernie Sims, they basically told him to quit hitting guys in practice because he was knocking out another player every single day. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget it. I mean, even when I got off the plane, and we were flying at different times, but at the same airport. And, you know, they was picking players up by the bunch. And we picked up players, and I seen Ernie, and I thought he was a strength and conditioning coach. I never would imagine he was going to be playing with us. He was that big. And then we got to the whole, you know, the next couple of days, we started practice. Ernie's just, it was unfair. He was a man amongst boys. They stopped letting him practice. He was knocking people helmet off left and right. I was never seen that.
That's wild, man. That's pretty awesome. Are you still around the game at all, Mike?
Yes, I actually coaching at a high school here in Atlanta at Wesley High School. Been there for the past 3 seasons, and before that, I was coaching at, I was part of control at my alma mater. So I've definitely been around the game.
So 34 years old, where do you want to go in your career here? Do you want to be like a guy who one day you look back and he's been the head coach at a high school, the all-time winningest coach there? Do you have higher coaching aspirations? Are you just doing this kind of for fun to keep your foot in the door of the game? Or where do you see yourself like 10 years from now?
I've definitely been beating myself up about it, man. I've been thinking about getting back into the college. I like it. I just like to work with kids, man. I like to give people the game, the knowledge, the lot of kids out here aspiring to be football players, but man, it's a lot. They don't know. They see all the touchdown catches and the Pro Bowl selections and all this glamorous stuff, man. But it's a grind, and I just want to help them get to whatever level they're trying to reach.
Is there a kid or two that stands out for you that you've seen that kind of impact that you've had on them, bringing them to that place?
I mean, coaching high school along, of course. Yeah, I mean, I touch kids every day, man, going to practice and workouts. I mean, for right now, I mean, I don't know what level, but at any level, when I was a young kid, a pitcher named Tristan Payton, he just graduated. He's entering the draft this year. I mean, that kid kind of resonated because I see myself in him when I was young. And, you know, it was just a matter of him trying to being able to cut it on and off, and, you know, being able to understand, you know, how to be a pro or how to conduct yourself. So if it was one person that still resonates with me, it's definitely getting Tristan Payton from UCF. He's entering the draft this year. He's actually training down at pitch speed at Brandon Marshall's facility.
Oh, yeah. Keep it all in the UCF family. We see how you're doing
no
it, man.
No question.
Mike, you consider yourself a Jaguar fan? I mean, you ended your career briefly with St. Louis with the Rams, but primarily you played here in Jacksonville. Do you keep up with the team? Do you interact with the fans on social media, all that stuff?
Definitely. I tell everybody I'm grandfather here, man. They changed my life, man. I'm a Jaguar fan for life. That's my team. I'm on Sundays yelling at the TV every week just like everybody else.
So what do you expect out of Foles in the 2019 Jags?
I like it, man. I like it. I'm expecting big things. I think our defense is already solidified for the most part. We just got a generation of consistent offense. And I think Foles brings that, you know, that veteran presence along with the success he's had in the past couple of years. He definitely can make these young guys, these young receivers, you know, a lot better. And our run game is already, I mean, Fournette is probably, to me, when he's out, he's top five back in the league.
Well, that's what he's got to show himself to be, right? I mean, with high draft selection comes great expectations, and we'll see if he can live up to them this year. I know we all hope that that's the case. David Garrard's a frequent guest/host on this show. I'm sure he's glad to hear you on as well. We're looking up the numbers from that game against the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah, you absolutely tore it up that day. You had 8 catches for 153 yards and a touchdown on 10 targets. And I'm sure Dave wishes he had more of those opportunities with you in your time here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, Dave, man, that's my guy, man. He's a great dude, man. I miss that guy. But, yeah, man, that was a great day for the both of us, man. We were going to a bye week that week, and we were, like, number one in the division. So it was just a great time for just to be a Jaguar, period. Either you're a player or a fan or in an organization, that was just a great time.
All right, well, listen, man, we hope more great times ahead. Like you said, you're grandfathered in, right? I mean, you all celebrate that championship if one ever finally comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars and they get that Lombardi trophy. You all feel like you played a small role in building towards that moment, I would hope.
Oh, no question about it. I'm alumni. I'm all the way Jaguar for life.
Love it. Mike, hey, listen, again, at Mike Sims Walker is where you find Mike on Twitter. He's always been an entertaining guy and very supportive of I see those youth football players getting those opportunities to take it to the next level, and you're a big supporter of those that crowd out there on social media as well. So continued success, Mike. We hope big things for you in the future. We love the fact that your heart is always going to be with the Jacksonville Jaguars. We wish you nothing but the best of luck, and we appreciate you coming on. We'll have you back soon if you got the time.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. No, anytime, man.
You got it. Mike Sims Walker, former Jaguar wide receiver, third round pick. Tony, who knows what he would have been? I remember going out to see Mike Sims Walker at those mini camp and training camp practices before he got hurt.
ABTO, yeah.
Thinking, like, this guy looks like a difference maker, yeah. Right? Looks like a different type of guy that they didn't have, and then gets hurt in the preseason. And it never really came back for him. You know, he missed the entire rookie year, only played 9 games in 2008, which was his second year in the league, so didn't really get going until 2009. Had a solid year there, and just never really clicked on all cylinders here. But love to hear so many of the Jag alumni feel that they're Jags for life. And so there you go, Mike Sims Walker. Cecil Shorts will join us next Tuesday.
Yeah.
We'll go down a little walk down memory lane with some of these guys. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today, one more to go here. As we asked you today, who do you expect to be the most improved Jacksonville Jaguar from 2018 to 2019? We'll share some of the thoughts that you expressed on that topic. Coming up next, Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, about final 15 minutes of the week for myself and Fat Tony here on 1010XL. Jaguars Today, thanks again to Mike Sims Walker for joining us. Tony, I were just talking on the break. Mike talking about, you know, kind of the highlight of his career was that Dallas game back in 2010. It was. That was on Halloween 2010. Mm-hmm. And, Tony, when you looked at the schedule in the offseason and you do the win-loss, we all do the let's project the win-loss record based on the schedule. Not that you didn't know who the opponents were going to be anyway, but now that we know the order of them, this will all become a lot more clear to us. That was the game you said there's no way that the Jags yeah. win this game, right? They're going to Dallas. This is the game that they're least likely to win. They were up 35-10.
Should have asked him if he heard any of that noise.
What do you mean? Oh, you mean
the guys just in the locker room?
Yeah, I guess.
Because it was, I mean, it was when the schedule came out to the game week, like the whole time it was like, they're not winning in Dallas. I mean, you kidding?
Right.
It was months
and
of
then and then they kicked that butt. I mean, seriously, they're up 28-3 heading into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Up 35-10, eventually went 35-17 in that football game. Totally dominated the Dallas Cowboys. Mike Sims Walker with a touchdown. Let's see. David Garrard ran for one. Mercedes Lewis had one. Mike Thomas had one. Another one for Mercedes. That's a big day for David Garrard. That might be David Garrard's favorite regular season memory as well. I think
that's
we
a great
understand
story
the postseason memories.
You know, with an uncle or whatever there, that was the last game he got to see him play.
Yeah, that was.
Like, that's a good story.
I mentioned Todd Monken as being instrumental in his progress as well. They didn't have they don't have a Torrey Holt type, you know, and there's a guy who would vote for having that kind of coach in the locker room, in your position group, so to speak, of being a positive, at least in his opinion, in his career.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny when he was answering that question. He's like, well, you know, I had Reggie and Matt, and in my head I'm going, oh, no. Like, what are those two guys going to show
you? What do they teach you?
Right, and then it's like, and then Torrey.
And didn't involve a CD case.
Yeah, and then Torrey got their year three, and it's like, oh, yeah. Like, I can imagine if you had been in a locker room with Reggie and Matt for a couple of years, and then Torrey walks in, you're like, oh, please.
And you know Torrey. Torrey's the
best.
The nicest guy.
Yeah.
So outgoing.
He's the best.
He really is, and he's a good dude. So we appreciate Mike Sims Walker stopping by. I think Cecil Shorts, Tuesday may be a difficult day for him next week. Possibly be Wednesday when he joins us. But regardless, Cecil Shorts going to join us on the program next week. And then you can tweet us which former wide receiver you'd like to hear from next. No, we're not limited to wide receivers. We just reached out to Cecil, been thinking about having some of these guys on, so now's a good time of year to do that kind of thing. What else did I want to touch on here, Tone, before we get to our question of the day? Anything that was not all that important, let's take a look at what folks had to say. Let me ask you, who do you think will be the most improved player on the Jags from 2018 to 2019? Not who needs to be, who do you think will be?
Who do I think will be is Jan.
Okay.
And it's not because I didn't think he had a really good 2018. I think what everyone thought he was going to be in 2018 is going to show up in 2019. Like, I think that he could potentially be, if the team achieves at that kind of level, that 11-12 win level, which I don't expect necessarily, but if they do, I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the
potential
discussion.
Player of the year candidate.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I'm going to go away from Jan because I think he played really well last year. And maybe didn't get the numbers to back it up. You know what I mean? So if you're talking about the numbers improving, hey, tell those guys pipe down in there, all right? We're trying to do a radio show in here. Oh, my gosh, this guy's unbelievable. XL Primetime coming up live from Dick's Wings for the NCAA tournament in about 10 minutes here on 1010XL. But,
there's so many candidates.
I hope it's a guy like Taven Bryan or DJ Chark.
One of the draft picks, yeah.
I haven't seen much to make me believe that that's going to be that. I think Ronnie Harrison is going to have a much bigger role, and I do think he'll be an improved player. I hope he's an improved player, you know, from what he was last year. But he flashed a little bit.
I mean, if it's Will Richardson, he's coming from zero.
Right.
So anything would be an improvement based on what
anything
we saw.
Anything would be an improvement, but it wouldn't necessarily be the biggest improvement.
Yeah, if he's a top half of the league right tackle.
Well, that would be huge. I can't expect that, no, either.
Right.
You know, I couldn't predict that. Right now, I would say for me, I would go with Leonard Fournette or Andrew Norwell. Like, Norwell, to me, I expect Norwell to come in and be a guy that every week he's talking about just grading out through the roof and all that. And
he had the worst season of his career.
Right. And it's a short career. It's a short, kind of measuring stick. But you draft
doesn't
a guy
mean he was
who's
terrible.
First-team All-Pro sign a guy who was first-team All-Pro, you expect a Pro Bowl-type season out of him. Whether he's going to be an All-Pro, I mean, that's a pretty high standard. You can't expect that every single year. He's young enough, should be in his prime. And the same goes for Leonard Fournette. You know, I think Leonard Fournette, I hope the only question we have is health. With Leonard Fournette this year. If the only question we have with Leonard Fournette is health, well, I can't do anything about keeping him healthy. Who knows if he's going to stay healthy or not? And people are out there saying, oh, come on, you can't expect him to. I'm not. I don't know. But by the same token, there have been history is littered with guys in the NFL who were oft injured their first couple of years in the league and got that reputation and then became durable or didn't suffer as many injuries. I don't know what phrasing you want to use for it, but that they got out of that kind of window where they're considered a guy you're holding your breath every time they touch the football.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Leonard Fournette. I think he can. I do believe in the talent. I do believe that Leonard Fournette, if healthy this year, if the line stays healthy, that's a big part of his improvement as well. But he could be that 4.5 yards per carry or better guy that he needs to be. And if he is, then I think you're talking about a completely different dynamic on the offense for this team, because you got a quarterback then that can take advantage of 8-9 men in the box.
Sure.
I think on a more consistent basis.
And you talk about a different dynamic. I mean, the way that you feel about this kind of question this year compared to 12 months ago, right? Like, who's going to be the most improved Jag? Look, 5-11, there are a lot of players you're looking around going, him and him and him and him and him and him. Like, all of them.
Right.
It's like, we need more from all these guys that we had high expectations
need
for.
Need a lot from Jared Wilson. Looks like he's your starting free safety.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, here's one. Living Lawlessly at Aaron Off Topic on Twitter just sent in. You're going to think I'm crazy, but Keelan Cole. I wouldn't think you're crazy if he has a bounce back season. Right? He's got that. He's the kind of guy that if he goes out there and catches 850 yards of balls this year, 60 catches for 850, Tony, that would qualify as a massive upgrade over what he did last year.
Yeah.
Just hang on to the easy stuff. I right now it's open, but I think Keelan Cole's got a significant hill to climb in order to make any kind of contribution on game day right now. I mean, you got to figure if Marquise Lee is full go, he's ahead of him in the pecking order. Dede's certainly ahead of him. They're going to give DJ Chark every opportunity based on what they invested in. Chris Connolly comes in having, you know, just as good a chance, I think, to make his mark here in this passing game than Keelan Cole does. Keelan Cole right now needs to worry about making the football team.
Yeah.
Right?
And I don't know if Connolly played any special teams in Kansas City. I don't know what the answer to that is, but I know Keelan doesn't play any
right
here.
So if you want to be a game day active player and up on game day and available to play, he's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah,
I think.
And are going into year two, do they still want to be running DJ Chark out there on punt coverage? Not that he wasn't great at it, but if he is going to step
ideally,
into that role,
no, you want right. him to be your number one wide receiver.
Like
ideally.
You could understand it as rookie year, right? You could understand it a little bit, but here going into year two, he got hurt last year. On top of that, I would imagine they don't want that to be the situation coming into this season, but we'll see.
Go ahead and let us know on Twitter what folks had to say about who they predict to be the most improved Jag.
Sure. From Irish Jaguar, DJ Chark. From Duval Doom, Ben Koyak said he'll catch 2 touchdowns in the playoffs this year. From Couch, we got Ronnie Harrison. From Brian, Leonard Fournette with honorable mentions for Chark, Brian, and Boye. From JagFam15, Fournette, hopefully. From Brian, AJ Can will impress, but I'm the guy who changed his Murray State upset pick, so I'm unreliable. From Terrence, Miles Jack, this will be his second year of middle linebacker making the calls. His confidence will be on the rise, and he should play freely in the defense now. I like that call, actually, a lot. From Jarrell, we got Fournette, he hopes. From Dylan Dede, he'll get 1,000 yards in his sleep this year. That would be massive. From Mitch, Ronnie Harrison is about to go off. From Brad, Andrew Norwell. From John, he said so many options. Telvin Fournette and Keelan Cole going to be his final answer. From David, hopefully DJ Chark with Leonard Fournette a close second. From Samuel, hoping it's DJ Chark. From Keith, got to be Taven. He can only go up, he says, from his rookie year.
Well, that is absolutely true. By the way, I'm looking at Alshon Jeffrey last year in 13 games, had 843 yards receiving. I don't know what Ertz had, but it wouldn't shock me if that was the highest total on the Eagles last year. So, even if Dede's the number one.
Well, 1,000 yards, I think people.
Yeah, Ertz was an 1,100-yard
yeah,
guy.
I think they misunderstand how big 1,000 yards. In the AFC last year, there were 8 players that had 1,000 yards receiving.
All right, so in every other team had one.
Yeah, and that was DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, which we'll see what the status is of Tyreek Hill. Coming into the 2019 season, Juju Smith-Schuster, Travis Kelce, Antonio Brown, T.Y. Hilton, Keenan Allen, and Tyler Boyd. Your 8 players with 1,000 yards.
Kind of the breakout guy
yeah.
in that group right there. Last one here on the text line. Well, two on the text line here. A, text line driven by Duval Ford. It feels like we didn't even show up at the draft last year. Honestly, all the picks are projecting as busts except Chark and Jacobs. Now, wait a minute.
Except?
Right. Like if any, if you're going to say who's the guy who had the best.
Ronnie Harrison.
Ronnie Harrison is the guy who already earned his way.
There's no question what Ronnie Harrison's status is.
Yeah. Right. He's your starting strong safety. Chark right now projects as much of a bust as any of them.
Yeah.
I hope he's – I'm wrong. Look, you can't just say, here's what he did as a rookie, therefore that's what he will be. But you don't have any evidence to suggest that he's going to be this first-round value wide receiver based on his play. Logan Cook may say, hey, wait a minute, as well. I think Leon Jacobs, I don't think he'll be much of an impact this year is my guess. We'll see. But I think he was more of a starter – by default.
Well, they brought in Jake Ryan. I mean, right. with the idea being we wanted to add a third linebacker that we feel like can start. Now, where they're going to start him, I don't know. But if Ryan's going to start in the middle, I don't see him taking Miles Jack off the field. You know, like he's going to be on the field likely at the strong side linebacker spot, which would be replacing Leon Jacobs.
You would think.
The first two downs.
The other one on the text line, poll question, how many times this week will Dempsey use the term devil's advocate? As many times as it is appropriate. So
how many times does he have to do it to irritate you? That plus
devil's
one.
Advocate. Devil's Advocate. Devil's Advocate, which is a sneaky good movie back in the
pretty
day.
Pretty good, yeah.
By the way, with Keanu and Charlize Theron and all that good stuff. A little freaky, by the way.
Chino, yeah.
All right, let's head out to Dick's Wings right now where XL Primetime is holding court.
Now, the 2-minute drill delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Waiting in line is so 2018. App your way to the front of the line. Order Moe's online or in the app. Walk in, grab the food, and go.
All right, Hacker is out of Dick's Wings right now with the XL Primetime crew. What's up, Hack?
Mike, what's going on, man? Yeah, it's a home game for me. Dick's Wings here in Mandarin off Old St. Augustine Road, about a 90-second drive from my front door. So very excited to be out here today.
90-second drive. Did you not then walk? Did you walk to work today?
I was lazy, Mike. I was lazy. 90 seconds in the car would probably mean about 6 or 7 minutes on foot. So I decided to take the car route.
That is quite an exhausting trek, 6 or 7 minutes. How did your bracket turn out after one day, Hacker?
Pretty good, actually. 14-2.
Wow, that's really good.
That's
yeah.
really good for me. Yeah, I lost Syracuse last night, and for whatever reason, I picked Marquette. Now, I have no idea why I did that. I would have been 15-1 if I would have just been smart and picked Ja Morant. But yeah, 14-2. I'll certainly take that going into day number two.
Interesting, because on the 1010XL bracket challenge, you're listed as 13-3, Hacker.
I had a conversation with Taylor Dahl earlier via email.
Uh-huh.
And I have the proof. I have the clarification in my email. She forgot to highlight Kansas on my bracket, but that has been remedied, if you will. That was the first thing I noticed about 7:30 this morning. And I had to go right to the source, Mike. It was a big deal for me.
All right. Well, I was terrible, so, continued success. So what do you guys have going for you out there at Dick's Wings today?
Yeah, obviously a lot of NCAA tournament talk. Big wins for the Gators and the Seminoles yesterday. We'll preview round two matchups tomorrow. Of course, Florida, a tall order against Michigan. Florida State has to play Ja Morant and Murray State. And then certainly a lot of Jaguar NFL talk as well. We'll be watching all the games all afternoon. Invite people to come on out here to Dick's Wings in Mandarin off Old St. Augustine Road.
All right, Hack, have a great show today, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, along with Joe C. and Matt Hayes and Leon Searcy, Hacker will be out there for the next 3 hours. By the way, after that, where's the Frangie show today? Do we know where the Frangie – are they on remote
Boston's,
today?
Boston's, I think.
They're at Austin's?
Boston's.
Boston. Okay, they're at Colhane's yesterday. I got you. XL Pronto was at Boston's yesterday. So Boston's by the airport for the Frangie show later on today as we go live all day long on 1010XL.
March Madness.
March Madness is here, Tony. And then they'll be back at it tomorrow at the Veterans Memorial Arena as well. I will be working tomorrow, so I will be taking in my NCAA tournament via the television box, as I like to refer to it at times. Tony, what are your big weekend plans? Anything good?
I'm doing J.U. Lipscomb for Atlantic Sun Baseball tonight.
Nice.
So I'll be doing that on ESPN3. And then for the weekend, probably coming back down to the arena tomorrow for the basketball action. But a lot of time on the couch. I mean, it's that weekend, right?
It is that
this
weekend.
First weekend of March Madness. You want to watch as much of it as possible because I won't see much of it next week.
Yeah, not that.
I'll be honest with you. When baseball opens up, I'm done. Look, I mean, that's where I'm at until baseball.
I will watch the hell out of March Madness all the way till its conclusion. And my wife is going out of town to spend some time with some of her girlfriends tonight.
Nice.
So not that we don't have more than one television, but there will not be a fight over it. I do love the March Madness live because I just sat there last night. We watched different stuff, and I had every game up right on my iPad.
Sure.
You know, I was going with the multi-screen experience, and it was fantastic. So love it. It's my favorite app out there on an annual basis. Check it out. You can download it. It's part of the CBS package. But March Madness Live allows you to watch every game because I don't have True TV at the house. But nonetheless, I have it on my iPad when it comes to March
Which is
Madness.
Good enough. Yeah.
Yes, which is good enough. All right, E took down honors for the opening day with 12 wins in this crew, which tells you – none of us really stood out all that much, but I stood out the least out of the trio. So hopefully a better day today. But if not, guess what? We'll be back again on Monday to talk about things. And we'll be that much closer. As we said earlier, today is 5 weeks from smack dab being right in the middle of the NFL draft. And 5 weeks from today, we'll be breaking down what the Jags did with the 7th overall selection, either moving up, down, or staying right there, sticking and picking, hopefully, a blue chipper. That'll do it for us today. Thanks again to Mike Sims-Walker for joining us on the program. For Fat Tony, for Emmanuel Thaloran, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll be back again with you on Monday from 10 to noon with Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL at 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go to the...